This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation pop experience. We're continuing on in our double duty here. We are talking about Peacemaker. Season 1, Episode 6, on this episode of Pop Goes to the Couch, it is called Murn After Reading. I am Andy Atherton, and I welcome you. I thank you for joining us and listening to us, as always. We have the full crew tonight, so let's get them in here, and let's talk about the episode. First off, Sean Kidd. Hey, Sean.
Good evening, Andy, and only thing I'm going to say to start this is, we do not deserve John Cena.
No, we don't. But we do deserve Scott Shiflett. Scott.
Well...
You know? I'm glad to be back. I was on the hunt for some butterfly gold, and some of that butterfly gold milk, and I was able to find some, but the butterflies are chasing after me, guys. I'm from an undisclosed location right now.
Ah, okay. Well, hope you're not behind a regular glass window, because that doesn't seem to stop them. Tim Capel is here as well, though.
Yes, thank you very much, and I am... I guess if Scott is the goop, then I am the cow. That metaphor completely collapsed. Yeah, great to be back here talking Peacemaker with the whole gang. The cast is reunited.
All right. And a pretty exciting episode last week. And this one just picks up the action right where we pick up. And we got episode 5 ends with Adebayo discovering that the shocking truth that Murn is in fact a butterfly. And this episode 6 follows straight on from this moment. While it may seem at first that Murn was going to attack Adebayo, it quickly becomes clear that he is not, and Harcourt arrives right on cue. But although Adebayo asks for help, she simply asks if she knows the truth now. So it turns out Harcourt figured out Murn's secret long ago. Even Economos is aware of their leadership, that their leader is an alien. And Adebayo questions Murn over his motives and why he took over the original man's body. Murn agrees that it might seem hypocritical, but he took over his host body because he wants to stop the butterflies from taking over the world, and says he decided to take over the worst person he could find in order to do so. His internal struggle over the decision is evident from his pain over reliving his host memories, but he feels his cause is just, and Adebayo reluctantly agrees not to share his secret with anyone else, mainly Peacemaker. So... you know, we get pick up with the cliffhanger or the exciting ending of the last episode. Sean, what'd you make of the beginning here and learning who really knows Murn's secret?
Good follow up from the cliffhanger. I don't think any of us really thought that Waller's daughter would die by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, I thought this was good. Harcourt knowing probably didn't surprise me too much. She's pretty intuitive and aware of things, so that doesn't shock me at all. I don't know the name of the guy who plays Murn, but I will tell you, I thought his acting here was really good. You actually felt for the guy. His emotion was really good in the acting and really, really coming out. And if you remember the early episodes of Peacemaker, I can't remember if it was Cena or somebody else saying, you know, I've heard really bad things about that guy. If you guys remember that throwback a little bit
yes.
to that early episode. So really good bridging the like storyline with that, where Murn basically says, you know what? I have to stop them. And I decided to take over the worst person that I could find. But in doing so, I still have his thoughts. And I realized he could have changed. So a real fight there. And I thought this was really well acted out. I really enjoyed this opening.
All right. Scott.
Yeah. And we also see, like with Murn talking, like we see that Harcourt is actually pretty good at her job, which we had seen. And she's like, yeah, I saw I was suspicious when a bomb exploded in his face and he didn't even flinch. Mm-hmm. So it's like, damn, okay. Economos acting like he sticks his fingers in his ear every time they bring it up just so he can have plausible deniability is on brand for him. But, Murn talks about, like, why he's going against the butterflies, and it paints them as bad guys, which, you know, we have some parts where we don't think they might be that bad, but at the end we see that they're full bad guys, and it's like, damn, we... might be screwed, guys. But Sean was right. Like, Murn does a great job. It's like, you know, people might be willing to change, and maybe he was willing to change, but I took that away from him. And it's For a show that's funny, it has some shockingly deep moments, which makes it amazing in my opinion.
All right. And Tim, what do you think of the beginning of the show?
Show does have some shockingly deep moments. It's not just a walking dick joke, which I think is what makes this show a cut above the rest, really. And that's just a credit to James Gunn, I think. Sean and Scott both hit on both of my key takeaways here. Just the performance and the scene with the Murn reveal, and he's explaining the backstory. Extremely powerful. And just, you know, again, credit to Harcourt's competence, really, as a professional. We learned from her that, and what we thought was just a sight gag in an earlier episode, you know, the door exploding in Murn's face and him getting thrown across the room. You know, we looked at that, we pointed and laughed, but, you know, really it's a callback to something that is a clue as to his true nature. And with Harcourt being the only member of this team with true combat, well, the only member of the team in the room at the time with true combat experience, she picked up on that, put two and two together. So I thought that reveal worked really great. And as we kind of had speculated, there is more to this invasion than we've been let on. We've got not just this, you know, secret invasion of the body snatchers thing going on with the butterflies, but a rogue butterfly that is kind of rebelling against, you know, the motives of, I guess, his people, so to speak, doesn't want to just conquer, doesn't want to take over, was perfectly willing to live contently on this planet before they all turned violent. And I don't know, as this episode goes along, I sort of wonder, is Murn Butterfly totally on the level here? I think there are some tells along the way that, I don't know, there's still a little bit of doubt in my mind. But all of this, you know, great start to the episode, great follow-up to our cliffhanger to last week.
All right, very good. So we cut to the supervillain himself, who's having a very amusing talk with the kids at Jameel's daughter's school about his life, and the viewers are given a brief glimpse into his brother's death when asked about his origin story. Meanwhile, Augie is out of prison thanks to Detective Song and Fitzgibbon. And tells one of his white supremacist followers that he plans to kill his son. More on that later, but since they've let Augie go and realized Peacemaker was the one behind the explosion in the first episode, Song and Fitzgibbon decide to take the team back to his home, to arrest him. So we get a really fun, we get a bring your kid parents to work or some kind of guest show and tell, and Peacemaker with these kids. Okay, I'm just going to run through some of the nicknames that he gives these kids that he calls them by. So we got Kid with Sad Eyes, Chubster, Gender Swapped Alfred E. Newman, Urkel,
oh my God,
Canadian Tuxedo, Rubik's Cube World Champion 2025, and Skinny Arms. So amazing. If I come up with more,
Adam Cole was in the school.
Oh, sir,
Bebe. All right, Scott, what do you think of this scene? And we get an addition note to this scene with this very funny school kids. And one kid actually said he can see right through him, which I thought was a real funny.
Called him a loser.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we see Augie getting out of prison. So, Scott, what do you make of these two scenes?
Well, I'm glad we got to see his best friend, Jameel, again. And he's like, dude, I just shared weed with you once. And now you see him, like, being there for, like, you know, bring your parent to school day. And he's doing the Q&A. A couple of my favorite one-liners is when one of the kid with a Flash shirt asked how the Flash was, and he goes, yeah, I've met the Flash. Like everyone else who's ever met him, I thought he was an unbearable D-bag. And just like Flash catching bullets for no reason. Then this kid asked if he ever met Wonder Woman, and Peacemaker goes, I've never met her, but she did spend an entire party IFing me from across the room. And Jameel goes, Jameel looks at him, and Peacemaker goes, what? I didn't say the F word. And it's just so great. And like Jameel's like, remember you told me you would do anything I ever asked you for? And Peacemaker's like, I never said that. But like he's still there at the school, which is awesome. And we see like, you know, we see like the Detective Song finally get like what she wanted done, because even though, you know, Augie is a piece of shit and a racist right to her, and then, like, you know, she has some pretty good quips of her own, you know, see if she actually does like the job correctly, and like, because Augie obviously didn't do it, but like gets out of jail, he's like, I'm gonna do what I should have done years ago and kill my son. It's like, oh, we're getting shit's about to break down on this episode. Yeah. Well, in the coming episodes, with this happening, with Augie out of jail, and they seem to be coming for Peacemaker.
Yeah. We also get the one kid to ask if he knows her, like her mom. He's like, I haven't seen her for like 10 years. Oh, well, it must be the girl.
And, like, 10 years old. And then he looks so scared when he's like, oh, the bartender? Yeah.
Like, oh, shit. All right, Tim, what'd you make of these scenes?
Yeah, the classroom scene is hysterical. But it also serves as a pretty valuable reminder that we have this backstory that's yet to be revealed with Peacemaker and his brother when they were kids. The brother dies. You know, most superheroes have kind of an uplifting origin story, at least traditionally speaking, that you know, motivates them to use their powers for good and do the right thing. And when you see characters with a tragic backstory, well, they tend to end up becoming villains. And certainly Peacemaker has had his villainous past, despite thinking that he's the hero of the story. And with this being a redemption tale for Chris Smith, at some point we're going to have a reckoning with whatever that origin is. And I suspect it's rather more tragic than maybe the recollection and Peacemaker's own mind, or what his father's spin on it is going to be. I think it's going to paint him in a more sympathetic light than maybe we've been used to. But speaking of Dad, yes, getting out of prison, really against the wishes of Myrn and who's the guy, the sheriff, the
Locke, I think his name is.
Yeah, the guy who's working with Myrn, who
the
I thought
man.
Was a butter. Yes, the inside man. I thought he was a butterfly as well. Yeah. Like, I don't know if we were supposed to be thinking that, but come to find out, it's not until later in the episode where it becomes obvious, well, he couldn't have been a butterfly before this certain thing happens. But we'll get there. And now, oh shit, Augie is on the loose, and he's on a mission to kill his son. Holy shit.
All right. Sean, what'd you make of these two scenes?
I would have liked to hear what Peacemaker's opinion of Green Lantern or Superman was, but I didn't get that in this episode, so had to settle for Flash. But yeah, we talked about how serious the opener was and the emotion that was coming out of Myrn, and then you just immediately flick the switch and go to the school scene, which was amazing. But then they go ahead and then they integrate this whole thing about his brother again. So they go from serious to comedy to serious, like, in a flash. Like, that's just how good the story is. It's like, that's how they can play this. Then the Augie thing is pretty cool. Like, Augie's such a dick, and immediately comes out and just says, you know what? I'm going to do something I should have done a long time ago. I'm going to go kill my son. And late-breaking news, there is a potential for me that Detective Song might have a place on my train.
Wow.
No, listen. It's not like a person that's on the train, like, you know, the normal person that's on the train. It's kind of like the cute girl next door with an attitude, because the way she stands up, like, listen, I like girls with attitude, right? And the way she stands up to Augie and her little cuteness, and there's a scene later on that comes up where I'm like, yeah, you know what? I think she could be in my train. So just, I had to throw that out there.
All right, we stay on brand. All right, so
people in your trains.
It's been a while since I've added someone to the train, Tim.
It's true.
What, episode one of this show? That's what.
Well, yes, but yeah, well, it's been a while. I wasn't here for episode one.
That's right. All right, so later Peacemaker is at home feeding Goff the butterfly he captured earlier in the season when Vigilante comes to visit him. Goff shares that he wants to talk, and Peacemaker tries to communicate with the butterfly through taps on his glass container. Not that Vigilante is able to ask any questions that require a yes or no answer. Peacemaker and Vigilante are still arguing over the questions when the police arrive at the scene. Myrn struggles to get the supervillain to answer his phone in order to warn him of their imminent arrival. Moments before his door is kicked down, though, Myrn successfully tells the pair what's happening through Vigilante's phone, and they escape via a skylight and hide in the trees behind Peacemaker's trailer. So I'm starting to think maybe something could happen here because Peacemaker kept Goff alive. I think there could be, I don't know. I'm thinking some kind of swerve or something could happen. I don't know. Just my idiot brain working right now. Tim, what do you think of this scene where we get some communication breakdowns with Vigilante and Peacemaker and Goff?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you because it begs the question, was the Goff butterfly lying? And the answers that he does respond to with yes, no, made it seem like that he was going to be like more of a benevolent presence on Earth. You know, they're not there to kill anybody. They're not there to put babies inside you. They're not, you know, doing this, that, or the other. But we certainly saw that when he was possessing the senator or the congressman, whatever the hell he was, he had a real vicious streak. I mean, the way that he tortured Vigilante. So I don't know. I think he's just kind of giving them the answers they want, so they'll set him free. Maybe that's all there is to it. But we do spend a lot of time on a scene for it to ultimately just turn out to be a swerve. So I don't know. I don't know where I'll land on this one just yet. Vigilante really proving himself to be like that friend that you have, who you really don't like, but if that's the only friend you have, you're sort of stuck with him because he's just an idiot. Like, he is useful in some ways. Like, he has certain skills, but that's about it. Like, as a person, just a total dumb shit. Like, just can't make any real meaningful contribution unless he's doing his one thing that he's really good at. It's just like, I don't know. That's why I love their relationship. So we get to see quite a lot of that here. But man, what an idiot.
Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of a scene from the movie War Games. I don't know if any of you guys saw that, where these two nerds who Matthew Broderick was talking to, one of them was Maury Chaykin, a.k.a. Nero Wolf, or the Grits guy. And my cousin Vinny and Eddie and the great Eddie Deason, and he's like, he's just getting so mad, he just starts calling him Mr. Potato Head. It's friggin' hysterical. I see like that here with these two guys.
I gotta rewatch that movie.
Yes, Sean, what did you think of this scene?
Yeah, good. I love the scenes with Peacemaker and Vigilante. They're just two bumbling idiots that just go back and forth, and it's pretty damn entertaining. And then yeah, when the glass breaks, when they cry, I love that they went up through the skylight to get away. I do have a question though. You're talking about this swerve. Like, are you guys saying from a swerve standpoint that maybe, I guess when you put it in context of this earlier, you said that, you know, Mern might not be all what he seems, and then you're talking about Goff. Maybe there's a swerve there. Are you saying that maybe the real thing that has to be stopped is Mern over Goff?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. But then that sort of gets called into question when
later,
if we get to the police station scene, but maybe it's like by any means necessary.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe that's a means to an end. So I actually thought about that myself. But we'll talk about that a little later. But it is interesting. I am going to keep that in the back of my mind as we go through the last two episodes. But yeah, this is really good. And just, you know, basically what it does is just threading the thread of one of the greatest scenes in this whole entire show so far, coming up a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. All right. Scott, your thoughts?
Vigilante's a moron, but him asking, do you like the color teal, and Cena getting frustrated is like, it's yes or no answers. Like, he can't, and why would you pick teal? And he was like, well, that would be pretty cool. I just thought that was so funny. And then they call Vigilante and he's like, yeah, of course. And like, Cena just rips the phone away from him because he's like, who is this? This isn't Vigilante. He's just a fucking moron. But it was awesome. But like, you know, I was thinking it might be a swerve as well, because like, we see Goff put the peace sign on there, and like, you know, they're actually having, for Cena and Vigilante, they're actually having a pretty smart conversation. They're basically just naming off alien movies, and if they're trying to do that, and it's like, no, no, no. But then like, what we saw, what happens later on, I think that was just like a little episode thing. Like, I think Goff is the bad guy. Mm-hmm. So. But no, it was a nice little scene, and it kind of scared you because like, I was worried what was going to happen, because I thought I thought Goff was going to take over Vigilante, and I'm glad that didn't take place.
So Vigilante does take off with Goff taped to his waist. They try to avoid being detected by Song, who notices eagerly and decides to investigate behind the house. Unfortunately, Vigilante loses balance, falls out of the tree, crushing the glass container underneath him, letting Goff out, who immediately takes over Song's body. Mm. Peacemaker and Vigilante run for the hills and are chased by the police. They get pinned down by the cops until Mern's man, Locke, on the inside, kills the people going after them and telling them he's left them a getaway car. So a lot happens in a short amount of time here. We get, you know, obviously Song is now body snatched, so to speak. And we see some brutal killings here by the guy on the inside. So, Sean, what's going on here?
Just the beginning of absolute chaos, the running through the woods. The scene where Song gets overtaken by the butterfly is absolutely savage. He's convulsing, blood spitting out. The other guy, the inside guy from Ernest, shooting people, Eagly gets involved in
this. Yes, Eagly was awesome.
Eagly was so badass in this. Like, this whole scene is just, again, from this point on, this episode just goes straight up bonkers. This was absolutely amazing. Amazing.
Yep. Scott?
Song getting taken over was really terrifying, but I'm not going to lie, I was kind of hoping it would fly up her butt, because that's what Vigilante posted.
Oh, and, Jesus.
And I thought that would have been hilarious if that was the way she got taken over. But it was, it's pretty terrifying how they take you over like that. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. But Locke just being a stone cold killer, and you see that Peacemaker has some problems with it as he just like one of the people, like Peacemaker, he says this, was unconscious and he just killed him anyway. It's bad.
Yeah, I wonder if Eagly could get taken over by one of them. Not sure.
What was the line?
Don't put that out there.
What was the line that Vigilante said about Eagly as he was killing people? I forgot what he said. Something about a being.
Oh.
I forgot what he said. There was a line he made.
Taking out eyes was awesome.
Yeah, there was a line that Vigilante said. I can't remember what it was, but it was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I have it playing, and I'm up to that scene, so yeah. I'll let you know if it comes. Yeah. Up. All right, Tim. What do you think of this scene?
Yeah, good tense scene. This attempted escape through the woods and chase is pretty awesome. We also see that Peacemaker's trailer gets ransacked by the police, and that this is where they discover the diary. So that's going to be coming back into play here. Excuse me. Yeah. Wow. The butterfly takeover of Agent Song. I mean, just does a really good job on selling you on the fact that this is an extremely unpleasant experience for the host. I wonder if, like, does the host mind, like, do they die right away, or is this more of a prolonged process while they are possessed by the butterfly? I wonder if they'll shed any light on that. Certain implications there, perhaps. Yeah, Eagly's great to see in action, the fucking pecking eyes out. Locke, just, again, being totally hardcore, showing no remorse, no emotion, whatever. This stone-cold killer, which is, again, just fueling my thought process that, okay, this guy's got to be a butterfly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, nope, that's still a no, but he's an awfully bad dude. Yeah, he's an awfully bad dude to be in league with Mern, who we're told is still the good guy somehow. So, you know, I don't know where this is leading, but we'll have to continue to keep an eye on. You know, it's like the story started out with us not knowing very much, similar to the characters within the show. Now it's like we know a little bit more than. For example, Peacemaker, but we still don't know everything yet. So they've still got us. They've got the gears turning now, really, where there's just a lot of plots in motion now for this series. And I'm really invested in all of it.
All right. So we have a couple of lines I saw. One was when Vigilante throws the knife at a guy and Peacemaker's like, I told you not to. He goes, what? Worse, he's paralyzed. What do you want me to tell you? Or he also says, Eagly is a badass.
So. I know.
Eagly's hardcore. Sorry.
He's hardcore. That's right. I was dying. That was so good.
Also, when they get to the car, I love how Eagly gets in the front seat and Peacemaker has to pick Eagly up and put him in the back seat.
Yeah. I'm thinking, like, they show you Sophie getting taken over by the butterfly. Like, they spend a lot more time there. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing the butterfly does is it gets inside, crawls into your brain. And that's where, like, mm-hmm. it takes over and knows your memories and all that stuff. And you cease to be you anymore because it's now controlling your brain. So, in effect, your brain dead.
Maybe? I suppose it would. Yeah, I suppose it would be pretty hard to survive having this foreign body burrow itself into your brainstem, basically. So yeah, I guess that's pretty much it for the hosts.
Yeah,
but it has access to all your stuff, so to speak.
All right. So they manage to escape and return to base camp while Song, now a butterfly, returns with a worried Fitzgibbon back to their offices, where she makes contact outside with a horde of aliens. So a bunch of butterflies in their ships with like the one we saw earlier in Peacemaker's trailer. The duo tell the team that Goff escaped and Murn warns of the dangers of their mistake. But before he can criticize him further, Economos discovers the location of the butterfly's food source known as the Cow. Song later calls all of her fellow aliens to her and orders them to attack and take over as many people as possible. So that includes Fitzgibbon, that includes all the officers in there. And Locke, who, like Tim said, we all thought was already a butterfly. Obviously not, because they wouldn't take him over if he was already a butterfly. And all the prisoners. So we get a dramatic slow-mo scene. She and the butterflies tear apart the police station that she worked at, and everyone, including the prisoners, are taken over in the goriest manner possible. This was kind of a terrifying scene to me, I think, a little bit. Great song, though. Great music. So we'll start with you, Scott. What do you think of this? This is kind of like a horror movie here.
And yeah, it really is. And this is where the team discovers about the diary. Because Locke had called Murn and told him of the diary, and Peacemaker's like, I don't have a fucking diary. And we find out that it was planted there, but like we think, oh, nothing to worry about until because we see Locke put the diary away, but then he gets taken over, and the butterfly gets all the information about the person's life, and we find out that the diary is still there. So we like think it's safe, and it's like not so fast because the diary looks like. We see some pictures of it, and it makes Peacemaker to look like he's some, you know, crazy Unabomber type person. Like they're going to make these people pay and everything. Like we saw like in some, you know, like the Eye, which people think is like the Illuminati and stuff. So we saw that also on the way when Peacemaker is on his way to meet up with Murn, we see him and Vigilante arguing over their cell phone and Vigilante, and he tries to bite Peacemaker, and I think it's hilarious. And he finally, and Peacemaker's like, "Don't bite me!" And then Vigilante gets the phone and throws it out of the window, and he's like, "That was a secured phone." And he's like, "I'm sorry." And he's like, "And it had pictures of Eagly." Then you see Eagly like squawking at Vigilante in the background. It's like, "You fucked up." And he's like, "I'm so sorry." And it's just a great scene. I love the banter between them. Like, I wish we had more time to them like teaming up together. I hope we see that if we get a season two of this and everyone survives. But yeah, that I don't know what song that was. I'm not familiar with rock music as well versed as you guys are. But that was like a horror montage right there. It was terrifying with the butterflies just attacking everyone, and then everyone's trying to do their fake smile because you know. Song was like, you got to remember how to smile. And Locke, it kind of looked like the Joker when he was trying to smile. that was terrifying. Like everyone's like smiling, demented. And it's like, oh, we are so screwed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe that song is Monster by Reckless Love. It may or may not be our outgo. We also had a new thing by Enough's Enough. I remember that. I actually do remember that song. Mm-hmm. And a great song that plays over the credits, which we'll talk about when we get there. Tim, what'd you make of this horror scene?
Same thing as you guys. It just looked like something from a horror movie, a really good scene from a horror movie. Just the slow motion unfolding takeover that is just such a terrifying scene as it plays out. Yeah, and then complete with the fake plastic smiles. They look like panelists on a WWE premium live event pre-show. Just really disturbing. I think we should point out also when Peacemaker and Vigilante reunite with the rest of the team and they kind of do their debriefing, and Peacemaker is denying the existence of this diary. When he tells Mern, like, hey, your man Locke, like, shot all these people, killed all these people in cold blood. That ain't cool. Mern looks a little bit troubled by that. Again, he may just be putting up a front, or maybe he didn't realize, like, just how vicious this guy could be. Like, maybe Locke and the old Mern, you know, had some history. Like, they went back and Butterfly Mern was just sort of exploiting that relationship without really knowing what it was unleashing. But I guess that's sort of a moot point now with them being a butterfly as well. Maybe we'll see that come to a head as we gear up for a finale. But yeah. I'm still, I don't know. It's keeping me guessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, Connemals does some a hell of some puzzle solving here with figuring out where this where the source comes from. And it's called Coverdale Farm, so I think that's a little wink and a nod to David Coverdale, lead singer Whitesnake. Sean, what'd you make of the butterfly scene?
Well, first off, I'm anxious to see what the cow is, for one, because I'm sure it's going to be something very horrifying. I will also say this scene with Song leading to butterflies into the police station, my favorite scene of the whole show. And the music, the song's called Monster, to your point. I actually looked it up on iTunes. It's not even on iTunes, so I was bummed out. But what a great freaking song. And then it plays cohesively with another scene that you're going to talk about on the next round. And it goes back and forth. But remember when I said there was a scene where I said, you know, I thought Song could join the train? When she's leading that pack of butterflies with that intense, I'm going to fucking kill you look as she's walking towards the police station and all the butterflies behind her. Yeah, you know what? I think she's going to be on my train. Now, that's prior to her sticking her long tongue out and drinking out of the jar. It's prior to that. It's prior to that happening that I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm down with it. But yeah, this is my favorite scene in the whole show so far. Like, this was just batshit insanity, freaking butterflies just killing people, blood squirting. I mean, he was just savage. Just really, really good. Really good.
Yeah, and we get Augie, with the skinhead hooker, basically. It's bad.
Oh, God. Yeah. She was awful. My wife actually cringed at that scene. But I mean, Andy, I know you're going to talk about it, but this scene with Augie, I got something to say about that after you talk about that, but go ahead.
All right. So meanwhile, Augie prepares for his fight against his son by having his white supremacist followers help him put on his white dragon costume. Unaware of terrifying beings headed his way, Peacemaker plays the piano at the team's base, then has a sweet heart-to-heart with Harcourt after she gives him a gun with a Dove of Peace laser on the side of it. Peacemaker doesn't have long to enjoy the moment, though, because the episode ends with the butterfly-riddled police revealing to the world that they have this diary, the one planned by Adebayo in last week's episode, and they aim to stop him by whatever means necessary. So that's how we close out the episode. Tim, what do you think of how it ends?
Well, fuck, because now Peacemaker is public enemy number one. So he's going to have everybody pretty much out to get him. I like this closing scene with the piano, which we now knowing that John Cena actually played the piano himself. Just again, what a gift to the world that Mr. Cena is. A real feeling of calm before the storm here, and this highlight on the humanity of these characters as we've gotten to know them is great and really well earned. From Peacemaker to Harcourt. You know, right on down the line. And Augie, meanwhile, gearing up to make his big move. I sort of think that's going to go in a different direction, but I guess we'll get to that in our wrap up. But certainly it looks terrifying with all of his followers and actually suiting up, seeing that, well, the suit still fits, so he's going to wear it. The skinhead hooker is extremely unpleasant. All of this is, all of the stuff with Augie is really unpleasant. Just what a monster. Just the butterflies aside, he may be our most just vile, inhuman creature in this entire series.
Yeah. It's almost, I have the butterfly scene playing right now. It's almost kind of like a zombie movie where they're all getting infected, and then they kind of like get up, or vampires maybe, because they're still like, coherent. I don't know. Sean, what do you think of the end of the episode?
Tim kind of alluded to it with the Augie thing about the suit actually fitting. Like, I'm watching this old, clearly overweight guy walk into this little chambers, and you see this muscle suit of the White Dragon. So does he really fit in it, Tim, or does he really need his henchmen to actually squeeze him into it? Because that's my takeaway from that whole scene, is that he had to have people get him into it. That's how I felt.
Does DC have an equivalent of unstable molecules to explain away some of the stuff?
I don't know. I don't know how he fit in the suit, but I'll tell you what, that suit was that was a damn good looking suit, and he looked good in it when he was
maybe,
in it.
Maybe it's got a girdle inside. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. You know, the piano thing was really, really cool. It was funny, even my wife, while we were watching, John Cena's not playing that, and then lo and behold, we find out he is. And then the scene with Harcourt I thought was really, really cool. And you could definitely see the chemistry going on with them, which is great. The finale of this. So I guess the way that I read this finale, and I guess I was trying to wrap my head around it, I might have been a little confused. The diary was planted to make it look like he was going around killing all these people and making it shut up about butterflies so people didn't know about the butterfly's existence. Is that what I'm trying to understand really what that was telling me.
Yeah, they were trying to make it look like Peacemaker is the only one. I guess that was their plan from before, that like Peacemaker.
Well, they planned it because they're going to do all this killing and death, and they wanted to frame it on him, I guess.
Yeah, Adebayo planned it so like they had their way out, and then it was
he's set up as a fall guy, basically.
Yeah, he's the fall guy for, and I got it, but I was wondering in what context was the fall guy. That's what I was.
That was going to be, I'm sure, the original intention of the diary, but they've pretty much co-opted that plan that the butterflies have. But
maybe we get a flashback of Waller explaining to Adebayo, like,
the diary. I hope so. Because I want to, and again, I might be overthinking it, or I was just too dumb to really figure it out, but I know it has something to do with just making him the fall guy. I just wanted to know what the details of him being the fall guy actually were.
That's just my assumption.
Well,
granted.
Well, they say like he killed like the senator and his kids.
Well,
and
that's the 16 what I'm saying.
People,
all the cops,
and the 16 people at the factory. So we do hear Locke saying that when they hold the press conference at the end.
Yeah, they basically say the book is the ramblings of a madman. So yeah, I get it. Okay, but yeah, I thought it was a really great way to end. Clear. You know what's great about this? Unlike Boba Fett, where we have one episode left and we're kind of like, how are they going to wrap this up? We still got two episodes of this. And shit's about to go insane the next two episodes, and I can't wait to watch them.
All right. Scott?
No, it was, I can't wait. Hopefully we see Vigilante take out Nazis. That, I always love seeing Nazis getting killed. The Locke, like, I loved Cena playing the piano, and then you hear, like, the backstory that Gunn this in because during the filming of Suicide Squad, like, Gunn's dog passed away, and Cena, to make him feel better, played like a song on the piano and like had like all these people crying in the bar before Gunn took some time away to go mourn his dog passing away. So like you see, like, damn, like Sean said at the beginning, we really don't deserve John Cena. It's just mind-blowing. I thought that was great, and of course him playing piano is ruined by who else? Vigilante. I thought you said he didn't have a diary. Just so absurd, but it really, like Sean said, sets the stage. Like, it sets the stage. I'm like, I can't wait to see what happens. Like, I am so excited. Like, shoot these episodes into my veins. Where at this point with Boba, I'm just like, oh, thank fuck, one more episode left. Like, I only got 45 more minutes of this. But with this, I'm like, damn, I only got like an hour and a half
John Cena and Peacemaker and Hardcore. And also Hardcore, you know, maybe showing some feelings for Cena because she dropped her first name for the first time, which I thought was very sweet of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the 80s.
Also, it's going to be weird. Also, it's going to be weird that James Gunn is writing scenes where his girlfriend is fucking John Cena, but I'm not going to, I don't, that's a shrink wrapped episode. So we'll just go from there.
All right. All right. So, I'm watching the press conference scene. I don't know what to go there.
You're so flustered.
I know. I'm a little verklempt. Talking about Fakakta, you know, Cena. Anyway, so obviously Waller knows about the butterflies because the diary has butterflies written in it about aliens. So, yeah, we have to get somewhere. We have to get the dots connected between how Mern got this detail with Waller and Adebayo and how this all kind of falls together. And we get a awesome Lita Ford song, Kiss Me Deadly, which is tremendous. Saw her in concert when I was 17 with Britney Fox opening up for Poison. So that's a 1989. Yeah, 1989. So fun time. So what's going to happen in the next episode? What do we think? I mean, I know we have that little on the next time on, but they don't give you away that much. And it, Sean, what do you think we're going to see in the next episode?
I think I said it last time. You know what? I don't even want to predict what I'm going to see in the next episode because you know what? Every episode has exceeded my expectations. Each one is better than the other. I certainly did not expect what I got in this episode 100%, like coming out of last week's episode. This whole butterfly invasion and the police station and Augie getting his fat ass shoved in. Like, I didn't expect any of this. And I don't even want to hazard a guess. I'm hoping that I'm hoping that we get a showdown with Augie and the Nazis, and I'm hoping they're saving the butterfly showdown for the finale.
All right. Scott?
Yeah, I think the Augie storyline is going to wrap itself up in a nice little bow next week. But I definitely think the showdown is going to be at, we're going to see Big Bertha, Big Bertha is...
Cow. Get the cow.
Yeah, I was going to say that was the cow, but Big Bertha is with... what's that red and yellow superhero?
Big Barda?
Yeah, Big Barda.
Mr. Miracle character?
Yeah, well, that's Mr. Miracle, so never mind. I was saying that was the cow's name. I've ruined my own joke. Fuck. But
it happens.
Where is he going with this?
Like, I thought I was talking about Daredevil's yellow outfit for a while. I don't know what he was doing.
No, thank you, Tim. You understand my broken Scott English. Shift Bada, but I think like we're gonna see the road to the farm because they said like, oh, like why is all this farm like, you know, creating this butterfly goo? But they're like, oh, probably burrow deep, so we're probably gonna see like a crazy finale, and next week is just gonna leave us wanting more.
You know what, one thing I'll throw out there, Tim, you know what I envisioned in this? I envision like the big queen bug in Starship Troopers.
Yeah,
coming out of that. That's kind of what I'm hoping I get.
That sucked out Richard Hart's brain.
Yes, that's what I want.
You broke up Zach and Kelly.
Yes.
Dick
Patrick Muldoon, whoever. Yeah, I definitely think that the cow. That's producing the. It's definitely going to be something truly horrifying, like the brain bug. So I think we're getting that reveal next week. I don't necessarily think we're going to be done with Augie and the Nazis. Augie and the Nazis is going to be the spinoff from this series. No, I think that actually they're going to do like a twist where Augie actually ends up working with the team to defeat the butterflies, because think about it, this guy's a white supremacist, he's got a real problem with people of color just from this planet. Imagine how he must feel about literal space aliens trying to take over. So I don't know, I think they're gonna set up like an uneasy alliance sort of thing, and then maybe he'll try to kill his son, and that's like the last thing that we end up dealing with ultimately for this first season. So that's where I think we're headed. Beyond that, I'm not really sure. Like, I'll leave them to suss out the details, because I know I'm going to be on board with... I know I'm going to be on board for whatever it is.
Well, we know Judo Master comes back, because he's in a little sneak peek there. And
can't forget about him. Yeah,
yeah, the wolf flies, much like in the movie Rampage. So, yeah, looking forward to it, to the penultimate episode next week. Like I said, could affect some scheduling because of, like I said, on the Boba Fett episode, actually the latest one that, due to Super Bowl interfering with our regular record date, that, look for next week's episode may drop a little later than it normally does. It should go up, though, before the next episode of Peacemaker on Thursday. So just keep an eye out for
that. Who watches the Super Bowl?
Yeah, you can take a stupid fucking football game for your podcast being late.
At least two of us don't watch the Super Bowl. So.
One of us could be driving, though, when we would record.
Okay.
So,
all right. Okay.
Don't worry, I'll be watching.
Mark.
I mean, let's face it, we probably all will, but some of us won't be happy about it.
Roll commercials and all that jazz.
I mean, the halftime show I'm there for. I'll be there.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, it'll be fine. It'll be fine like it always is.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good. So that's going to bring it close to this episode of Pop Goes to the Couch. I want to thank all for stopping by and listening. For Sean Kidd, Scott Shiflett, and Tim Capel, I'm Andy Atherton. We'll see you next week for Peacemaker Episode 7. Take care.